horrible situation in Wisconsin. I mean, you know, you can imagine all of us have been to a Christmas parade, a holiday parade, to be there, you know, in the holiday spirit with friends and family, and to sit there to watch a marching band go by, enjoying the music, enjoying the holiday spirit, and then to see out of nowhere an SUV come barreling down the roadway. You know, in a lot of the videos that we've seen of this attack in Wisconsin, you see the marching band go by, and there's kids, and not only kids in the parade, but kids that are watching the parade. And you see this red SUV barreling through, and at first the crowd is absolutely stunned. And then you start to hear the screams. A woman named Angela, who lives in the town where this parade was happening, she joined Fox News, and she said that she was watching this parade from a balcony when the SUV came through. And she said that so many pedestrians and folks watching the parade jumped in to help the injured band members.
There was cops at every corner. They were springing into action already when the car had hit, was coming down the street. There was people running after him, and then cars after the parade goers and people got out of the way. There was more cops coming down the road in their cars and vehicles. They were there instantly. It was very quick.
So you can imagine just the shock of that situation, trying to make sense of what has just happened, and then you see lying in front of you not only kids, elderly people. You heard that there was a group that's these grannies that was out marching as well, one of whom was killed in all of this. And we're going to get to some more information on the suspect in this case here in a moment, because we're learning a lot about this individual and really the horrifying criminal background, criminal history of this individual, and the fact that just a couple days prior, they had actually been incarcerated and got out on a very, very low bail, which is horrifying. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. I want to get back to some of the witnesses here that saw what happened in Waukesha, Wisconsin, and then we'll get the latest update from the chief of police there. So first, Angela says, watching from her balcony, that she saw a huge police presence on the scene almost immediately.
There was cops at every corner. They were springing into action already when the car had hit, was coming down the street. There was people running after him, and then cars after the parade goers and people got out of the way. There was more cops coming down the road in their cars and vehicles. They were there instantly. It was very quick.
The police chief there, a man named Dan Thompson, gave an update to the media this afternoon, of course, and came out with the numbers of fatalities. Five people killed, dozens of others injured. He claimed, which of course is the obvious question whenever something like this happens, the first thought is this a terrorist attack of some kind? And he says, the police chief, Dan Thompson, says there's no evidence of that.
We have information that the suspect prior to the incident was involved in a domestic disturbance, which was just minutes prior. And the suspect left that scene just prior to our arrival to that domestic disturbance. When the suspect was driving through into the crowd, one officer did discharge his firearm and fire shots at the suspect to stop the threat, but due to the amount of people, had to stop and fire no, did not fire any other additional shots. The officer is on administrative leave as part of the department protocol. No one was injured as a result of the officer firing discharging his firearm. The subject was taken into custody a short distance from the scene, and we are confident he acted alone. There's no evidence that this is a terrorist incident.
I got to tell you, it was horrifying. The images of this SUV, this red SUV that had left the scene, and actually the suspect drove back to his place of residence. And if you've seen the images of his SUV, and we'll get to more on the suspect in a moment, but if you've seen the images of his SUV, the front end of it is just totaled, absolutely totaled. And you realize, and it hits you, the gravity of the situation, that that is a result of it hitting human beings. Absolutely absolutely horrifying. I want to get to a little bit about the suspect in this case, because we're learning an awful lot about this individual and his really, really deep criminal history. His name is Daryl Brooks. He's 39 years old. He has now been charged with 5 counts of intentional homicide. He also apparently goes by the name Math Boy Fly. He was a rapper, kind of an amateur rapper or something. And we're going to play for you in a moment some lyrics from one of his videos that YouTube has since pulled down. Not because I want to glorify this dude, but because you can get a little bit of glimpse into his mind and sort of the violent nature of his mind. But I want to talk first a little bit about Daryl Brooks's criminal history. He has a criminal history dating back to, I mean, gosh, the 1990s. Multiple felony convictions. And in fact, he had just bonded out of jail on Friday on a $1,000 cash bond. Let me tell you the charges that Daryl Brooks was in jail facing, the crimes he was accused of, when he was allowed to bail out on Friday for a $1,000 cash bond. Reckless endangering of safety, disorderly conduct, bail jumping, battery, obstructing an officer. All of those things are why Daryl Brooks, 39 years old, was in jail last week. And on Friday, he was able to get out of jail on a $1,000 cash bond on all of those charges. That's according to online court records. And then, of course, we know just 2 days later, Daryl Brooks is plowing, allegedly, his SUV through a Christmas parade. There are some serious questions that need to be answered about what led up to the ability of this man who's been charged with crimes at least 10 times since 1999 to be able to be facing all of those accusations last week and to be able to bail out for $1,000. I'll be honest, that sounds like some Seattle stuff. That sounds like something that would happen here. I didn't know stuff like that, that bail for repeat criminals in other parts of the country. I mean, we complain about that all the time here in Seattle. So there's a lot of questions there. You know, when we look at his criminal history, he's also pled guilty to a felony count before of inflicting substantial bodily harm to a person who was 17 years old. That's according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So when you look at his criminal history, I mean, these are serious things. These aren't petty crimes. So I want to talk to who, I want to talk about who Daryl Brooks is as a rapper. Not that, again, I want to glorify him in any way, but I think that his lyrics are certainly a window into his mind and his criminal history and his propensity for violence. So again, Daryl Brooks goes by Math Boy Fly online. And Peyton, I think we have this, and we didn't have to bleep this part of the song, correct?
Yeah, this was an incredible 30 seconds that, surprisingly, no censor needed.
All right, so again, I'm going to play this. It's from a rap video from Daryl Brooks, a.k.a. Math Boy Fly, and I want you to listen carefully to the lyrics.
Talk is cheap, I won't stop till you deceased. Coming out your face, you bleed. Carbons, we gon' sweep the scene. Senses, we gon' find the heat. Take you out the movie screen. Shout out to my shooter team. They gon' handle teams for the revenue. Can't even eat off these dishes, they got residue. Remember when I used to play the hard back in middle school? Remember when them cases had me stuck in that cubicle? Playing like you stupid dog, you know what I do to you. Cool on and text, so it keeps shooting when I shoot at you. Panoramic musical, beat you like I'm Rougarou. Call a Uber before you double back and hit the Uber too.
Shout out to my shooter team. Talk a lot of talk about shooting, and look, I know a lot of rappers are sort of old talk, and you've got people who never, you know, engage in any of this in their lives, but this is a guy with a substantial criminal history. We're going to get check on traffic here in a moment, but I should note, when we talk about the victims, 5 dead, dozens injured, a Catholic priest, parishioners, some school children, a member of the Milwaukee Dancing Grannies, all part of those who were either injured or killed in this horrific attack in Wisconsin. We're going to talk about that more coming up a little later in the show. It's good to be with you. I wanted to make sure that we got in the latest on what's happening in Wisconsin. Before I said a hello to all of you, it's nice to be here. It's my first time ever filling in for Jason Rantz or for anyone. You guys may know me from Fox 13 in Seattle, and I resigned from my job 2 weeks ago, and it's opened me up to be able to do things like this, which I wasn't able to do before. And so this will be a lot of fun. It was interesting, though, Peyton can attest. We had a little technical issue in the studio in the first 2 minutes of the show, and it turns out my headphones weren't plugged in.
You handled it like a champ, though. You went on, and you kept going, played some audio.
I couldn't hear anything, and I'm thinking it's this big technical snafu that's going to take, like, some... There's multiple people in here, and I didn't plug my headphones in.
No, I love that our engineer, Josh, was able to jump up, and that's why we pay the engineers the big bucks, right?
You know, and I'm blonde, but I swear I'm not stupid. I haven't plugged my headphones in.
It's a great start.
All right, yeah, thanks. We're going to move on. Everything is racist. Everything is racist, and if you don't think everything is racist, then I got news for you. You're a racist, too. At least that's the sentiment in the city of Seattle. Socialist Seattle City Councilwoman Shama Sawant, as you guys know, is facing a recall on December 7th. It's actually going to be on the ballot. I know some of you would like to vote on that recall, but you're not going to be able to. That's only people in District 3 in Seattle. And that's fitting, right? The people who put Shama Sawant in office get to be the ones who decide whether she gets to stay. Just to catch you guys all up, and this is, I know it's a Seattle-centric story, and a lot of you don't live in Seattle, but one, I know a lot of people like anything about Shama Sawant, but two, the story I'm going to tell you about the Sawant recall, I think it shows a pattern in the media of fear-mongering, of vilifying Republicans, and of calling everything racist. And so I think there's a lesson that can be learned from this. So for those of you who don't know, Shama Sawant is facing a recall that was approved by the Washington State Supreme Court. I mean, in our state, you can't do a recall for no reason. There has to be a legal justification. So she was three different charges, recall charges. One, that she let Black Lives Matter protesters into City Hall after hours during the pandemic to protest. And she did that. There's no denying the fact that she used her key card to access City Hall and let in hundreds of people. I was there for that. Two, that she led a group of protesters down to the home of Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan. And you might be wondering, well, who cares if somebody protests outside the mayor's house? Well, the issue with that is Mayor Jenny Durkan used to be a United States attorney. And her address is actually protected under a state law because of death threats she's received due to her work as a U.S. attorney. And so Shama Sawant, the allegation is she abused her knowledge of the mayor's address to lead hundreds of people down there, and including that day. And ever since then, the mayor has been subject to repeated vandalism at her home. We already know that the mayor is subject to death threats, as are many politicians. So the Supreme Court approved that to be one of the charges against her. And the third one for the recall is that she misused taxpayer money to support her Tax Amazon initiative. And this is something she's been admonished for from previous council members. Whenever you see Shama Sawant, you know, the people standing behind her with the big red signs that say, like, Tax Amazon or something about rental relief. Well, she prints those at City Hall. And so, you know, that's part of the thought of, like, are you using taxpayer money to further your personal political agenda? So that's where this the Stranger comes in. You guys probably know the Stranger. They're like the alternative weekly in Seattle, like hyper left. Well, the Stranger sends out this mass blast to subscribers. And the subject line of this email from the Stranger's editorial board is, Sawant recall is racist. Join the Stranger in fighting it. So it's got this picture of Sawant. It says, Sawant's recall is racist. And then it doesn't even explain why the recall is racist. It just makes this declaration on this email. It's got like three paragraphs. And then at the very bottom, it has this big yellow highlighted paragraph where they're asking for money. So the Stranger sends out this fear-mongering email saying the recall against Shama Sawant is racist. And then at the end of the email, it says, your support directly ensures that we're able to continue covering this racist and conservative-backed recall election and whatever comes after it. Thank you. So it's like, now we know what the fear-mongering is for. if we just call this racist and conservative-backed, we're going to freak out our readers and they're going to donate to us, which is just so typical, right? But I want to get into what their rationale is for this recall effort against Sawant, which, again, was approved by the Washington State Supreme Court, which by anyone's standards is progressive. I want to get into why they're saying it's racist and why they're saying it's conservative-backed. Because I think it's very, very telling. So first, and I'm assuming you know who Shama Sawant is, but she is a woman of color. And so, you know, that's, I guess, the basis for them saying this at the onset. They say that this recall is about punishing a woman of color for supporting Black Lives Matter protesters during the riots and the protests in 2020. This is the line from The Stranger about why this recall is racist. While the individuals who work for the recall campaign might say they vote for Democrats and oppose racism, they are ultimately taking money from hundreds of Republican donors, including at least 98 Trump donors, and using an undemocratic process to remove a woman of color from power for supporting BLM protesters 2 summers ago. That is what's going on here. No, that's not what's going on here. First, I love that The Stranger calls this recall undemocratic. How is it undemocratic for the people who voted someone into office to get an opportunity to vote them out of office? That seems pretty democratic to me. And then, of course, they're saying that this is about punishing a woman of color for supporting BLM protesters. No, I just detailed what the recall is about. It's about 3 very specific charges related to RCW that the Washington State Supreme Court approved to move forward and to head to the ballot for voters. And then there is this accusation that this is a right-wing recall, which is something, first of all, Shama Sawant's definition of right-wing is anyone right of her. So that's like all of us. But this is something Sawant says all the time when she's criticized. Even, you know, there's this columnist, Danny Westney, in the Seattle Times, who's definitely not conservative. And anytime he writes something about her, she attacks him on Twitter as this conservative columnist. So I just think it's funny. This is her go-to thing to scare people. But what's really interesting is the truth behind the Sawant recall is all in the numbers. So if you look at the data on the City of Seattle website about who's contributing to these campaigns, the majority, the biggest chunk, more than 50% of donations for the campaign supporting Shama Sawant come from out of state. They don't even come from the City of Seattle. In contrast, the largest percentage of donations for the Recall Sawant campaign come from where? Where do you think? Inside her own district. So the financial backing to get Shama Sawant out of office is coming from people in her district, her own constituents. And the financial backing to keep Shama Sawant in office is coming from out of state. So The Stranger and Shama Sawant, they can call the recall racist. They can call it right wing. But the people who they're trying to insult with those labels are, in The Stranger's case, their readers. And in Sawant's case, her own constituents. So they can name call these people all they want. But it doesn't change the fact that the vast majority of people supporting the recall financially live in Sawant's own district. And she needs to contend with that if she wants to keep her job. I'm not going to guess what's going to happen with that one. You know, Sawant didn't win by very much in 2019. And so I imagine the recall is going to be close. So we'll see what happens on December 7th. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Brandi Cruz filling in for my dear friend Jason Rantz. This hour is brought to you by MM Comfort Systems. What are you guys doing for Thanksgiving? My mother is coming in from Fargo, North Dakota, which means that next week and probably the week after, my full-fledged Minnesota accent will have returned with all my O's and my A's and stuff.
If you think it's bad now. Can we get you to guest host during that, too?
No.
I want to see the accent.
Whenever I see my mother, and it's usually around Thanksgiving, she sounds like that movie Fargo. I don't know if you've seen it. By the way, I am monitoring the text line, 1-800-465-8770. I'm getting some nice messages. You guys trying to make me feel good about myself. Casey from Auburn. Brandy Cruz is in the house. I'm going to love this. I am in the house, and I'm actually in studio, which is nice. Let's see. 360, absolutely love hearing Brandy on the radio. She needs her own show. I don't know about that. Love Jason, too. And I love you, Brandy, with 3 exclamation points. I like it. Thank you for the enthusiasm. I'll read some more messages, but hit me up there. I'm trying to respond to those that I can. So I bring up Thanksgiving for a reason. So I don't know if you guys know this, but the vaccine deadline for federal workers was today, actually. And we know locally when it comes to, you know, vaccine mandates, the impact that it has had on things like staffing for policing, for the Washington State Ferries, for the Washington State Patrol, for the Washington State Department of Transportation, which, you know, there's a lot of fear that they won't have enough staffing to keep the roads clear, especially up on the passes. And so, of course, heading into this holiday, knowing that today was going to be the deadline for federal workers for the vaccine, there was this panic in the media, and some of it, I think, is rightfully so, that airports would just be a straight-up disaster for Thanksgiving. Not that they're not usually, but even more so, especially if you've got a bunch of people fired on Monday. So Cairo TV in Seattle filed this report, went to the airport, as local TV often does around the Thanksgiving holiday, to talk about the potential slam of travelers combined with the federal vaccine mandate.
What do you think about the wait so far?
Not too bad. We were actually expecting a lot more, just being a few days leading up to Thanksgiving, but it hasn't been bad so far. Lines are moving pretty well.
And I usually come in early, at least 2-3 hours earlier.
Oh, you come in early on purpose.
Yeah.
Did you come earlier because of it, or?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah.
How much earlier?
Not much.
No.
No.
But so far it's been fine.
It's been fine.
That could change Monday. TSA workers and all federal employees must be vaccinated or risk losing their jobs. That didn't change even after a letter from their union calling it inexcusable that contractors have until January to get the COVID-19 vaccination, yet they are facing a November 22nd deadline and possible termination.
We're very confident this is going to be a very smooth operation over the next several days.
Moreover, the TSA administrator says it could take time to know the full impact of the vaccine mandate.
We have a lot of employees who've asked for either medical or religious exemptions as well. And so we'll go through the process of looking at each one of those individual cases and making a determination over the next several weeks.
He says not to expect chaos, but there are some skeptics here.
Hopefully it goes well overall and people are inclined to get vaccinated. But, yeah, I guess more delays to be expected probably.
First of all, I love local TV news. And having just resigned from my job in local TV news, I can tell you it's fascinating to me. We'll talk more about this in a second because I want to talk about TSA vaccination numbers. But that they need to go to the airport on the holidays to tell me that, like, the airport's going to be busy on the holidays. I always get a kick out of those stories. I'm going to talk more about that in a second. But so the TSA is totally downplaying today the extent of the impact that the vaccine mandate federally is going to have for holiday travel. A spokesperson for the TSA, Lisa Farbstein, said on Twitter, breaking news in all caps, approximately 93% of TSA employees are in compliance with today's deadline for the federal employee vaccine mandate and exemption requirements. The employee vaccine mandate will not impact holiday travel. Happy Thanksgiving. And look, 93% is definitely up from the last time that we got an update from the TSA. The last time in October, I believe it was, they had said only 60% had been vaccinated. So, of course, there was some panic there thinking, okay, if only 60% are vaccinated, you're telling me you're going to fire 40% of your staff ahead of one of the busiest travel times of the year. But the TSA now is saying about 93%. But look, 7%, that's a lot, especially when you're talking about, you know, really across a lot of different sectors already being short-staffed due to people, you know, the mass resignation, leaving during the pandemic. And also, I imagine that's not a full picture of how many people quit the TSA, retired from the TSA, transferred out of TSA because of the mandate itself. And we've seen that in Seattle, right, where, you know, the mayor might say, oh, only a dozen officers are going to get fired of the vaccine mandate, where in reality, in the weeks and months leading up to that deadline, we saw a lot of officers retire. And so it's always a question of whether we are getting the full picture of how much of an impact the vaccine mandate has really had on any particular agency. Because when the TSA says approximately 93% of employees are in compliance, 93% of the ones that are left. And so I think it's also a bold prediction for the TSA to come out on Twitter today and say it will not impact holiday travel. Because then if holiday travel is an absolute disaster, people are going to have an awful lot of questions about that. You know, and of course, the vaccine mandate extends far beyond the TSA. The one for that Biden put down for private sector workers, of course, is on hold because of a lawsuit. So we're talking about the one with actual federal employees. The Biden administration told Fox News today that there's about 95% compliance with the mandate across all different federal agencies. But again, remember, you know, if you're talking, for instance, about U.S. Border Patrol, agencies that are already seeing short staffing, any sort of reduction in the force is going to be significant. And I don't think you can diminish that at all. And so even if the TSA is talking 7% of people who are no longer going to be at the airports working on Thanksgiving, I wouldn't be so bold as to predict that that would not impact holiday travel. Just back to what I was talking about earlier. I don't know if you feel this way, Peyton. So it's interesting. Now that I'm away from the local news structure, there's always things that have bothered me about local TV for a long time where I'm like, why are we doing this? And now that I'm outside of it, it bothers me even more. Am I wrong to hate the practice, the tradition of sending a reporter to talk to airline travelers when we know that it's going to be busy?
We know they're telling us stuff that we already need to know. And I just flew over the weekend. I went out of town, went to Vegas, and there was like three TV cameras there Friday morning getting set up to do news stories. This isn't a news story. We all know.
I do not need someone on TV. I'm not like, you know, I'm getting up to go, let's say, fly back home to Fargo for Thanksgiving. And I'm like, oh, wait, let me flip on the TV and see if the airport's going to be busy. Because unless that local TV news person tells me, I might not realize this. And I think one of the other things that bothers me about it is, one, I feel like they think I'm stupid when I'm watching when they do stories like that. But also, what a waste of a reporter. So one of the things that people, you know, ever since I left Fox 13 a couple weeks ago, people are asking me all these kind of inside things about TV news and all of that. But one of the things that's not a secret is local TV news is losing all sorts of people. I mean, I'm an example of that, right? A lot of people leaving local TV news. And so staff is really in short supply in local TV newsrooms, including in Seattle. And so I'm thinking, you know, I kind of know how this works. You've got maybe three reporters in the morning, and you're going to send one of them to the freaking airport.
To SeaTac, the greatest place on earth.
To SeaTac, to talk to travelers about busy holiday travel. It seems like just such an immense waste when they could be doing way more important stories. And also, I swear to you, if a reporter, when I go to an airport at 5 a.m. for an early morning flight, I'm not looking my best. I'm just going to be honest. And the last thing that I want when I'm cranky, got up early at the airport, hate the airport, is for someone to stick a camera in my face and ask how I feel about standing in the very long TSA lines. So please, if you see me at the airport, just leave me be. I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk to the local media or any media.
I would like the angle better if one of them goes up to Payne Field to show us how much better it is to go through the non-traffic, no one there Payne Field rather than the crowd. That would be the better story.
I will say Payne Field is beautiful.
It is.
Oh, my
gosh. No one's ever there.
I took a flight to Vegas there with Nicole Thompson, the Dory Monson producer, and we went out of Payne Field. Oh, the luxury. I had a sparkling rosé. I was sitting in this deep leather chair, and it was beautiful. It feels like a private airport. It feels like
that.
You're like a billionaire, and this is like your spot before you fly out. So I loved it. Wow, we got off on that tangent on that. But so we'll see. Hey, you guys, let me know if you went to the airport or have been to the airport the last couple of days, if you noticed any sort of noticeable lack of TSA presence or something like that. All right, coming up, SNL. I know some of you listening might not think SNL is very funny, but I got to say, they debuted a segment I thought was really funny. It's called Republican or Not. And after the break, I'm going to play some of it for you. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. I am Brandi Cruz in for my friend Jason Rantz, which, what is he doing, Peyton? Is that secret? Should I not ask what Jason's doing?
No, it's not a secret. He wants everyone to know so that they all know how wealthy he is. He's in London.
Oh.
I don't know what he does there, though. Jason's notorious for not having friends even in Seattle.
Like, I'm his friend.
You're one of three.
Oh. You know, it's hard to be his friend. It's not always easy.
It's hard to try being his producer.
I've got to defend our friendship a lot. Oh. But I'll never let the internet cancel it. It was funny, he asked me to fill in, and I said, and I don't want to alienate viewers, but I said, you know, I'm not really conservative. And he said, that's okay, just don't act liberal. And I said, I can do that too, because I'm not liberal either. I mean, I'm a moderate independent. And he goes, well, you're conservative where it matters. I was like, okay, I'll fill in for you. So you can go jet set off to London and do your thing.
Yeah, go to his fancy coffee shop. Right. He's looking at sneakers.
Eat his pastries.
Exactly.
Peyton, do you think SNL is funny?
I do enjoy SNL.
You do?
See, I like older SNL. The 90s was great SNL.
I don't hate it either. I know a lot of people, and probably some listening, because they weren't too kind to former President Donald Trump.
Not at all.
But you have to admit, he was an easy president to parody.
So easy.
So easy. And so you can't blame him for that. And they've never been kind to too many politicians.
And Alec Baldwin did a good Trump, I thought.
Yeah, there's been some okay ones. You know, and yeah, they have some misses here and there on segments, but gosh, they debuted one over the weekend that I really thought was funny. Especially for me, I don't like either of the political parties, and so whenever you're making fun of either of them, I'm on board with that. Like, I just don't like the two-party system. So SNL debuted this new game show segment called Republican or Not.
Hello and welcome to the show. The game is simple. We're going to meet some people, and our contestants have to guess whether they're Republican or not.
The game is simple. So then you've got these two contestants, and they bring out individuals who give the contestants some clues, and the contestants are supposed to guess, are they Republican or not? So the first guy to walk out, this is a normal-looking dude. His name is Brady. Here's his clues.
I think Facebook is evil.
Oh, wow. Because they're spreading disinformation or because they banned Donald Trump?
Not so easy, is it?
Maybe we need another hint.
I would say you do.
I buy all my produce straight from a farm.
Because you want to or because you have to?
I don't know, Miss Ohio. You the expert. Keep going, Brady.
I respect pro athletes who stand up for their beliefs.
Which athletes?
And which beliefs?
No guesses? Okay, then. Give them the last clue, Brady.
God, I hate cops.
Okay, he is not a Republican.
Oh, sorry. So close. But no, Brady is indeed a Republican. No,
but he said he hates cops.
Yes, but he was talking about these cops.
So you can't see the picture. It's a picture of the cops defending the Capitol on January 6th. So I was like, oh my gosh. So it's very clever. Another one. So this woman walks out, a regular looking white lady named Lacey, and gives her clues as to whether she's a Republican or not.
On Twitter, my pinned tweet is my body, my choice.
Okay, that's a trick. She's talking about vaccines, right?
Oh, if we only knew. Another hint, Lacey.
I support Caitlyn Jenner.
In what way? Politically?
Y'all doing great. Doing great.
And give us another clue.
Okay, my favorite comic is Dave Chappelle.
Starting when?
I love my job. All right, give him another one.
Last month, I went to a board meeting and complained about a book being taught in my daughter's school.
Okay, I definitely know that one. She's a Republican.
No, sorry.
What? She was complaining about a book in her kid's school.
That's right. And that book, the Bible.
Oh, okay, one more. So this woman walks out. It's obviously one of the... So they just introduce her as Liz. It's obviously one of the cast members pretending to be Liz Cheney. Here we go.
I'm a congresswoman from Wyoming. I'm endorsed by the NRA and have an 80% rating from the American Conservative Union.
Nobody wants to ring in?
Yeah, I really want to. It seems so obvious, but this game is weird.
My name is Liz Cheney. I'm the daughter of Vice President Dick Cheney.
She's the daughter of Dick Cheney.
Okay, y'all are being real tricky here, aren't you?
I'm a Republican.
Republican. She just said she's a Republican.
No, sorry. Again, that is wrong.
What? How?
The Wyoming Republican Party actually voted Representative Cheney out this week for opposing Donald Trump.
I am a Republican.
You might tell everybody that, but it's not what other Republicans say.
It's not what other Republicans say. I got a kick out of that. That was a funny segment. It's all on YouTube. But it also, this is something I care about a lot. I don't want to alienate anyone, but, you know, the Republican Party, and when we talk about Liz Cheney, the idea of it being, you know, there's this idea of big tent or basically no tent. And there are some who believe that the Republican Party needs to be a big tent party. That means even for people who didn't support the former president, even for people like Jamie Herrera Butler, Dan Newhouse, who voted to impeach, that if you don't make room for more Republicans in the tent, that you're just going to lose elections. And in Washington State, I don't see how anybody can disagree with that. You know, there's a lot of Republicans who say that Liz Cheney isn't a Republican, that she needs to be kicked out of the party because she's, you know, obviously been very vocal about Donald Trump and about elections and all that stuff. But, you know, and we're going to get into next segment, next hour, top of next hour, the fact that Kim Wyman just resigned, the Secretary of State, and they just swore in a Democratic replacement for her. You know, there are a lot of people who would call Kim Wyman a rhino, which I don't love the phrase rhino. I actually kind of hate it. But I always thought for people who didn't like her as a Republican or didn't think she was Republican enough, you do realize what the alternative is, right? Because the alternative to even a moderate Republican is just a full-fledged Democrat. And so I guess I'm curious, you know, and message me on the text line, 1-800-465-8770. You know, what is the issue with people who are so angry about moderate Republicans, you know, or call them rhinos? Because in our state, you know, a rhino, and in the case of Kim Wyman, that's the only thing standing in the way. A moderate Republican is the only thing standing in the way of this, the entire West Coast having complete Democratic control in every statewide elected office. And so I guess I don't understand this sort of desire to demonize people who aren't Republican enough and just sort of allow, what, Democrats to win all of those seats because you'd rather have a Democrat than you would a Republican light or a rhino, as some people say. That confuses me. So I'm curious to hear people's point of view on that. But again, coming up next hour, we're going to talk about the fact that our Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, who was the last remaining Republican on the West Coast, is Secretary of State no more. We'll get into the qualifications or lack of qualifications of her replacement. That's coming up.